Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Does an orthopedic condition or sports injury have you sidelined? Make your comeback with GW Hospital Sports Medicine. We offer services from neck to toe, including care for shoulders, hips, knees, ankles, and hands. Plus, we're the official healthcare partner of GW Athletics, the DC Furies, and the DC Revolution. Get back to doing the things you love. Learn more at gwhospital.com/sportsmed or call 888-4-GW-DOCS. Physicians are not employees or agents of this hospital.
Hey everybody, welcome. Sorry we're a tiny little bit late today. I'm here with the amazing coach Tim, who is Tim Pickett from HP3 Coaching. He's sponsored by Scarpa, Sidas, Supernatural Fuel, anything beginning with S basically, and he's the winner of the Summer Spine. That is also beginning with S. Challenger South. Oh my goodness, he's just addicted to S's. It's a 108-mile race along the Pennine Way, Spine Challenger South. He won it this summer. Congratulations, Tim, again. And so he is here today to talk to me about how to do a 50-mile race in a fast enough time to qualify for a 100-mile race in the future, so like 15, 16 hours kind of thing. But first, before we let Tim actually say anything, I need to read out some words from our sponsor, who is Currens. So Currens is a 100% natural blackcurrant supplement for ultra runners. It won Best Recovery Award in 2020 and 2021, and it's been called the Nike Vaporfly of running supplements. So if you don't feel the recovery benefits, you get your money back as well. So I've been taking them to help with DOMS, which is delayed onset muscle soreness, and they certainly seem to help after my Rutland Water half marathon last year. And my next race is the Manx Mountain Marathon 50K next month, April the 8th. So let's see how the legs are after that using Currens. So I've got some available in my shop online, which is top left up there. I'll after the podcast, I'll put a link up there. And if you go into the show notes or the film description below, then you can see a link there and click through to my little shop. No obligation to buy, obviously. Just if you fancy it, give it a go. Can't do any harm, can it? So, welcome, Tim. It's snowing here with me. Is it snowing here with you? Have you been running in it?
Yeah, it's coming down pretty heavy now. We're expecting quite a bit later on this afternoon.
Yeah.
So we did get the warning that might have to come and get the kids early from school.
Oh, no. So, not at 11, though, hopefully.
Yeah, it's all good. They'll be fine. It's not coming down that heavy just yet. But,
no. And if they do
it's winter. It's
supposed to snow. Yeah, just send them outside. Send them outside for a snowball fight while you carry on with your work. Have you been running in the snow yet this morning, or have you been working so far today?
I've been working so far. I'm going to do a run later on. I was planning on doing sort of some tempo efforts, some speedier stuff. So
good luck with that in the sleepy snow.
Yeah, I might take that onto the treadmill. I can see this week being a treadmill week. I had some great fun in the snow last week, went up to Snowdonia with my colleague from Scarpa, John Shield, and we did a nice little adventure up over the Glidders. And we were expecting a nice clear day. The Mountain Weather Information Service said it was going to be 70% chance of clear summits. No, we had zero visibility.
Oh, no.
So for a recce, we were recceing the Ultra Trail Snowdonia 100k course. So when you do a recce, I mean, this is a good tip, is obviously you get out there and do recces. It's helpful if you can actually see the ground you're running on and remember it for race day. Just have a good day on the hills.
Oh, and is that on Instagram? Because you do quite a lot of reels on your Instagram, don't you? And I've noticed you've got a load of Scarpa, like meet the team and Scarpa training weekends and things like that on there. Is it one of those?
Yeah, it's one I posted last week. So I'm not that regular with Instagram, but it was a little fun reel I put together. If you look at my Instagram page, there's a snapshot of John and me and some of the conditions we were running in.
Oh, so, yeah, fantastic. Oh, cool. Well, everyone check that out. I'll put a link to Tim's Instagram in the film description below, but it's at Tim Piggott HP3, is that right?
That's the one, yeah. Hold on.
Yeah. Fantastic. Oh, well, we've got loads of people watching live this morning. So we've got Peter, he says morning. John Airy says hello to Claire and Tim. Caroline Janice says good morning, everyone. Phil Haddock's here as well. Severin says hi. Tracy's watching as well. Lisa Mason is watching. Tadeusz's watching. And John Doyle. There's loads of people today. So thank you, everybody, for tuning into the slightly earlier time. Let's cover the Fast 50 Miles stuff that we've said we were going to cover. And then let's get on to some patron questions. Because if you're a patron of Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel, you get to ask Tim some of your actual training questions. You get to ask all the experts, but Tim is our monthly chat guest and he is very happy to answer everybody's training questions. So first of all, my question is, and I found out that I couldn't do the Lakeland 100 this year because I haven't done a 50 miler in the right time frame. So that's where we are now. So now to do the 100 miler, I'm now down to do the Montane Lakeland 50, but to qualify for then doing the 100 miler the next year, I've got to do it in sub 16 hours. And yes, I've noticed that some 100 milers, like for example, the Centurion races, they require you to have done a 50 in 15 hours. So I was just wondering, because I know I can get round a 50 and probably in the cutoff time, I'm hoping, because it's quite generous on most 50 mile races. But so I don't have any problem kind of completing that kind of distance because I know I can do it. I've done that before and I'm quite determined. But how on earth do I get fast enough to do that? Because speed is not my forte, it must be said.
Yeah.
Determination and just keeping plodding on definitely is.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, it's not even these kind of races. If you're looking at some of the, you know, the really big famous races in terms of things like Western States, you know, they've got a list of qualifying events, but you have to finish in certain times. You know, that can be finishing 100k or even 100 miles in a certain time in order to qualify. And again, it's looking at, you know, even things like, you know, the UTMB type events. Again, it's a case of there's often, you know, cutoffs that you're looking to achieve. And I suppose it's also, we're thinking about, you know, being able to do the distances in a fast enough time. So when you're saying a fast 50 miles, we're sort of talking about fast enough that we're ahead of the cutoffs rather than we're talking fast enough to win the race.
We're not talking winning the 50 miles. Not for me anyway.
So then you need to be understanding the demands of that particular course, because of course every race, every ultra, every trail race is going to be different. So one 50 miler can be very, very different to another 50 miler. You need to be thinking about what the elevation change is, but also the type of terrain. So is it going to be very technical? So, you know, we're just mentioning the start of our call here that I was out looking at the Snowdonia, Ultra Trail Snowdonia, and that's going to be a very, very technical race. very tough underfoot, very rough underfoot, you know, bits of scrambling in there as well.
Sounds great.
Compared to a lot more runnable. So there could be something with a very similar elevation change, but it's very, very runnable underfoot. So you need to understand the demands of that. When it comes to obviously the cutoffs, some races will have sort of front-loaded cutoffs. In other words, that it's harder to hit those first couple of checkpoints. And then once you get there, the cutoffs kind of get softer, as it were.
So you've got to kind of make the effort to start with.
Yeah. So there are some races where you know you're going to have to go hard relative for you for the first 90 minutes, 2 hours, something like that. And once you then through those first few cutoffs, then you're going to be a lot safer and maybe can sort of relax into it a little bit more. So you need to just do a really good analysis of the event that you're targeting, understand what those time splits are. And then you can think, right, I need to get to this distance in that amount of time. Mm-hmm. What is the distance, but what's the elevation change as well? So again, you know, you coming from your, you know, your hiking, mountaineering background, you'll be aware of the Naismith's rule when it comes to calculating time. So thinking about how much elevation change. So if we've got a 1,000 meters of elevation gain is going to be the same as 10K on the flat. So you can kind of work out, right, well, if it would take me this amount of time normally to run a 10K, so let's say it takes you an hour to run 10K, and there's an extra 1,000 meters of elevation vert, then you're looking to add on an extra hour on top of whatever that distance is going to be.
Yeah.
So you can, and I mean, that's a very rough guide. There's another, I'm struggling to remember the name off the top of my head, but there's a sort of European, I want to say it's a German calculator that you can use to, again, work out what your speed is therefore likely to be, or your time likely to be over certain terrain and certain distances. So again, with all of my races, I will use those calculations to work out what time I'm likely to be at set aid stations, because then that helps me plan out what my nutrition is in between each aid stations. But we can use the same thing to think about, yes, what do you need to be taking with you between each aid station, but then also how long is it likely to take between each aid station, and make sure that you're then pacing yourself. A, you're not going off too hard because you're scared of missing those cutoffs, and you end up going much faster than you need to. And let's say you end up an hour or an hour and a half or 2 hours ahead of those cutoffs.
Yeah.
But then you blow up.
Yeah, and that's what it would be worrying.
Exactly. But also that you're not bimbing along, enjoying the scenery, and then suddenly realise, oh, hold on, I'm now slipped my timings. So it's being very aware of what your time, what your pace needs to be, what your effort levels need to be for each of those sections.
So it sounds like before you even start the training or anything, there's a lot of planning to be done around this race. So I need to sit down and really have a look at the Montane Lakeland 50 and just like write it out, like on a big chart on my wall, like, and have it maybe a gradient profile of all the hills and things like that. That sounds really fun. I love doing stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. I mean, we've talked a few times about sort of race planning and things like that. And, you know, go back to the, you know, the 100 mile stuff and the amount of planning and preparation and kind of just calculations that I do for these kind of races. And that's, you know, something that people always then comment on, you know, not realizing how much thought goes into all the other stuff around. It's not just going for a run. How that train needs to be built up.
I had on my list of questions sprint work, mileage per week, long run, aid station efficiency, but we haven't even touched on those yet. We're just planning at the moment.
But once you've done that, once you know, okay, so I need to be able to run, you know, let's say that the first aid station is going to be 10 miles into the race.
Yeah.
Right. So I've got to run 10 miles with, let's say it's going to be, I don't know, 2,000 foot of elevation change or 3,000 foot, whatever it's going to be. Okay, so how long would that normally take? Or how long have I got to do that? Mm-hmm. What am I doing in training now? So then you can start to replicate that in training. So then you can test yourself. And if you can try and replicate similar terrain, brilliant. Because of course, then you can give yourself the confidence that, okay, I know what it feels like to run 10 miles in, I don't know, let's say you've got 3 hours to do it. Okay, fine. So I know that I can do that 10 mile trail section with a similar elevation profile in 2 hours 30. Great. I know I'm going to be ahead of the cutoff. Big confidence boost. Mm-hmm. So you're not standing on that start line going, am I going to make the cutoff? Because the nervousness, the fear of, am I going to make the cutoff? That's energy that you're just wasting just through fear and nervousness. But if you stand on that start line and it's like, yeah, I know I'm going to get to that first cutoff and it's all going to be fine. Yeah, you're going to be great.
Cool. So you have to train for the kind of the broken down parts of the race that you've sort of broken exactly. down and put on a piece of paper or like put in a spreadsheet or something like that. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, well, this makes it all sound a little bit more doable in a way, because it makes you feel more in control of the situation. Because otherwise I was just going to throw myself at the 50 miles and just hope for the best, really. So this is brilliant. But is there certain things that you can do, like in terms of, like, should I be looking at a certain mileage per week? I know you mentioned for the 100 that now I should be on about 40 miles a week, and then next month possibly was 50 miles a week. But I'm not actually doing that because I'm now not doing 100. But yeah, do I have to do a certain mileage per week?
Again, it depends on the type of terrain that you're looking to race. So if it's something that is very hilly, then actually making sure that you're doing enough vertical gain is probably going to be a more important metric for you. With a lot of trail races, it's more about time on feet rather than hitting a certain distance per week. I mean, in order to comfortably, safely finish a 50 miler, you know, you need to be in a position where you're quite happy running, say, 30 miles a week on a very regular basis. And the thought of doing a 30 miles a week isn't a challenge for you. And if you're doing, you know, 40 or more, then you're probably doing enough mileage to get round that quite comfortably.
Yeah.
You don't, okay. If you're doing a 50 miler, you don't need to be worrying about, you know, doing 50, 60 miles a week just to finish a 50 miler. Yeah. Now, if you're looking to race a 50 miler, yeah, okay, we're talking more, aren't we? But just to finish with a smile on your face and not suffer too much and not be, yeah, chasing those cutoffs too much, then getting yourself in a position where you're doing, you know, 30 miles a week, nice and comfortably, you're probably going to be in a good place, provided, again, you're getting enough elevation in there as well. It's not just a case of getting on the treadmill and just nice, easy, flat running, yeah. And then suddenly put yourself on the trails and you can't run.
And would you include walking in that? Because I did a 15-mile walk up Fairfield on Friday.
Yeah.
Can I include that? Because it was a good bit of elevation. Yeah. Okay. So you can include hiking. Okay. Yeah. And should I be doing like maybe one sprint session? The Montane Lakeland 150 training plan says to do 10 30-second efforts within an hour's run on one of them. And then it also says to do like 5 strides at the end of another run. Is that enough? Like, because 30 seconds, you know, it's not that taxing doing the 30 seconds.
No.
Maybe so they'll up it in the following month or something, but at the moment it's 30 seconds.
That's enough. So, I mean, that's working on your running efficiency, so working on your mechanics of running fast. So it's not a case of doing those kind of sprint efforts aren't working on, you know, for example, VO2 max, where you're doing, you know, 2 to 3 minute efforts. It's working on simply the kind of tendon conditioning. It's working on the, you know, the neural coordination of running fast.
Yeah, they said imagine like Eliud Kipchoge just running a marathon and do that for your 30 seconds. It's not supposed to be like a full out like sprint on a rugby pitch or something. They said it's like relaxed speed, like like imagining a really good runner running, you know, at a marathon pace speed.
Yes,
which for me is a sprint.
Yeah. So, you know, scattering strides like that in at the end of your long runs, you know, a few of those within your easy runs is all brilliant stuff in terms of improving your running, essentially your running form, your running efficiency. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I suppose you're getting those 2 to 3 minute intervals if you're just seeking out hilly runs in general, aren't you? You're getting, not intervals, but you're getting that vertical sort of effort in. You don't have to apply
yourself. Depends how you're building the hills in. So it might be that you are doing some specific efforts on the hills. So yeah, absolutely. You know, I think a key workout is, you know, every week doing at least one solid effort, that 2 to 3 minutes, so really hard on the hills. So it might be 5 by 3 minutes up a hill, jog back down again, or on a long undulating, you know, maybe a medium long run, so, you know, 90 minute long run or something. You then add in sort of 5 by 3 minutes of hard work uphill, and then easy running in between. That's a key workout. But if you're going out to do, let's say, your easy long run, you want to keep that effort easy. So even if you hit the hills, you don't want to then be pushing into that kind of zone 3 or even zone 4, that sort of upper aerobic. It's, you know, if you're going out to do an easy aerobic run, you keep it easy and aerobic. Yeah. So that probably does mean you're going to be hiking some of those hills rather than pushing hard.
So that hard session would just be like an hour session, but the long run would be like maybe like 6 hours hiking, running, but keeping your heart rate low, like 140 beats per minute, that kind of thing, and hiking up the hills and being okay at the end of it.
So, you know, you mentioned about doing the Fairfield, you know, horseshoe there. You would have been hiking up out of Ambleside. You would have been sort of running hard up there.
Yeah.
And then when you get up to the top, you might have been jogging little bits on the top of the sort of plateau and maybe some of the descent coming down. Well, depending on which way round you went it. Did you come down the wall side, did you?
No, we went up. We went up the right-hand side and we went anti-clockwise, so the way that most people we met coming down. But we did hike it because I was with my husband and he isn't running fit at the moment. Or he doesn't like running stuff like that. So we were just hiking. Yeah. But it was great.
Yeah, so you're just hiking up. So you're just keeping the effort level in that, you know, zone 2. Perfect. That's what we're looking for.
Yeah. So would you do, you know, the 2 to 3 minutes, 5 times 2 to 3 minutes efforts of hard work, would you do that session as well as one of those 10 times 30 seconds efforts within a 60 minute run? Okay. So that would be like an extra session for me to add in. Because if I complete all of the sessions, like the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then Saturday, Sunday runs, I just feel really knackered. So I didn't know whether maybe I should just like drop the Wednesday session so that I'm just running 4 times a week rather than 5. Because I just don't know if I can just, I don't know if I can hack it. I just keep getting a cold. I keep getting everything Finley brings home, I just get. And sometimes I don't get a good night's sleep. So I think for longevity, I might just have to tone it down a bit for me personally.
That's parenthood for the next couple of years.
Yay!
Wait till he starts school as well. When it all kicks off again.
Yeah.
Yeah. But unfortunately, that is just parenthood. I mean, avoiding getting sick is about making sure that we're getting sufficient recovery in there. You know, are you getting enough sleep? And of course, that's always a challenge as a parent. What's your nutrition like? So, you know, are you getting enough calories to support your training and all the other demands?
I'm eating too much chocolate, I think.
Well, chocolate's good, it's for magnesium, isn't it?
Very healthy. It's a healthy thing, practically.
Are you getting enough, you know, fruit and veg to get those micronutrients? So things like that. It's looking at your overall, you know, nutrition, overall health in general. So it might be a case of if you're struggling to recover. Why? Because if you essentially, if you're only, so careful with that, but only running 5 times a week, you're not overtraining, but you might be under recovering. If you're struggling to recover from that amount of training, it's less that the training's too much for you, it's going to be more that the recovery isn't sufficient to cope with that amount of training.
Yeah, I think it might be the sleep.
Exactly. Now, it may well be that you just acknowledge, right, it's not that I'm training too much, it's just that I can't recover enough, and therefore you do need to knock the training down a notch. So yeah, maybe you do drop it down to four times a week.
Yeah, and give or do more walking rather than actually running. Yeah,
or make the Wednesday. So do, you know, it might be strides on a Tuesday, a good fast hike on a Wednesday. You do your 2 or 3 minute efforts on a Thursday, rest on a Friday, easy run Saturday, long run Sunday, something like that. Or long run Saturday, and again, more mountain time on a Sunday, just hiking time.
Yeah.
You know, it might be that way around. I would say, if anybody is struggling with recovery and feeling like they're not able to absorb the training, is reflect on how well are you recovering. And the big rocks of that are going to be, are you getting enough sleep? Are you eating sufficiently? And then looking at the structure of the training, and then we can add on all the other additional ways of improving recovery.
Yes. Okay. So that sounds like a good week. So the good aim for when not ill is doing the hour run with the 30-second efforts times 10 on, like, say, a Tuesday. On a Wednesday, it's just a nice, easy either walk or run for an hour, with maybe 5 strides at the end, like 15 seconds, just running fast strides, just to get your technique going. And then the Thursday can be the 5 times 2 to 3 minute efforts, which is hard work within like an hour or so's run. And then Saturday, park run, but with a buggy, so not hard work. Well, you know, it is in a different way. In a different way, but not pushing it. Like, I used to try and do like a tempo run with the buggy, and that's really hard. And then Sunday, long steady with club. So yeah, because I look after Finley on a Saturday so that Steve can have some time to do what he wants. And then Steve looks after Finley on a Sunday, so I get time to do what I want. So I usually do the long steady run with the club. And then we have like a bit of family time in the afternoons. So yeah, that sounds good. Yes, that sounds like a good plan. When I'm not ill, that's fine. So I need to be eating loads of fruit and veg. We've got loads of fruit and veg in the drawer just downstairs. I need to prioritise more sleep, I think. I need to just, because sometimes Finley goes to sleep at like 8, and sometimes I'm like, right, well, maybe I should just go to bed now. But you kind of feel like you want a bit of time to yourself, don't you? So you end up going to bed at 10, waking up at 6:30. Yeah. And that should be enough, surely, 8.5 hours. But I've always needed a lot of sleep.
Yeah. Or maybe it is just, you know, that mid-afternoon, just 20 minutes, shut your eyes, whether it's a bit of meditation, just, you know, Headspace app or Calm app, or there's other ones out there, or just, you know, lie down yourself that 20 minutes just to recharge.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great idea. I've been struck down by migraines quite a bit recently, so I'm just trying to get to the bottom of that at the moment. I have got them in the past, like from usually from sunlight, and I've got the window just here, and sometimes I'll get one in the left-hand side here if I don't shut the window, which is a real shame. but just recently, they've been getting more frequent. So I've just made a list of everything that might be causing them, and I'm going to cut everything out. I think I might have eaten too much chocolate this month because it was my birthday last month, so I got sent loads of chocolates. So I just ate them all within like days. So it could be the chocolate. It could be not wearing my visor and not wearing my sunglasses. It's really annoying because it's really debilitating. Yeah. But anyway, things like that prevent me from running. And this cough that I've had for 2 weeks now, it's just not shifting. I am running again.
Easy. Well, keep chatting to your GP and find out what the solutions.
If it were that easy. It's really hard to see one around here. Okay, well, that sounds great. I feel renewed with my efforts around my training for the 50 miler. I just wanted to also just chat a little bit about the race itself, the 50 miler, because I know that you can do quite a lot in terms of efficiency at aid stations. And I just wondered what your thoughts were about that, because you can waste, you know, if there's 10 aid stations and you're spending 10 minutes at each, then that's immediately 100 minutes. Absolutely. An hour sort of lost. Can you just run through them? Like, how are you personally more efficient at aid stations, would you say?
So it depends on how many aid stations there are. You might want to think about if they are quite close together in a race, and maybe the first aid station isn't long into that race, do you need to stop at that first one? So are you going to be standing on the start line with, you know, two full soft flasks of drink and food and all the rest of it? So can you just run straight through that first one if it's only maybe 5 miles into the race or something like that? So again, being sort of tactical as to which aid stations you want. But then also in that pre-race planning that we talked about earlier on is having a very clear idea as to what you expect you're going to need at every aid station. And I will have that written out. You know, aid station one, I need to fill up two soft flasks. I need to pick up whatever bits of food or whatever my plan is. So that when I'm approaching that aid station, I'm then going through that mental checklist of, right, coming up on this aid station, this is what I'm looking for. For example, if it's only water, as I'm approaching it, I'll be asking the helpers, right, where's the water? And just go straight there, fill up, boom, out. If, for example, in your soft flasks, you're adding some extra powder to them, so whether it's, maybe it's going to be like sachets of Tailwind, for example, or other products, get that in your bottles in advance. So, you know, you finished your bottle before you got to that aid station, great. So as you're approaching the aid station, get your soft flasks out, unscrew the lid, pour the powder in. So when you arrive in the aid station, all you're doing is putting your rubbish straight in the bin, filling up with the water, top on, back in your pocket, walking out the aid station. Rather than get to the aid station, stand still, unscrew your bottles, pour the powder in, fill the bottle up, da, 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 da. Just get all that done whilst you're jogging or hiking into the aid station. So it's just prepping in advance.
Yeah. And sort of move through the aid station. I feel like you're sort of doing everything so you can be like, here's the stuff, pour the stuff
exactly.
in, and then go off like screwing the bottle back up whilst you're moving out of the aid station.
Pick up that food, but don't start eating at the aid station. Start walking down the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the, you know, the longer ones, you might be picking up a hot drink. So you might be carrying a mug and you're picking up a cup of tea or a cup of coffee. Well, don't just stand in the aid station drinking it or sit in the aid station drinking it. Walk down the road with your mug. Stand still, take a sip, walk down the road a bit more. Try not to spill too much, but you can be getting, you know, 5 minutes down the road and then you finish your cup of tea rather than 5 minutes just sitting in the aid station with a cup of tea.
Yeah, even walking is really, really useful.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I've done races where, again, you know, you're carrying your own big bowl and spork and picking up your, you know, your hot meal at an aid station. Yeah, grab the hot meal and then we're walking down the road eating our pasta or whatever it might be. And you're getting another 5-10 minutes down the road and then you finish your meal, put your plate and everything away in your pack and off you go again.
Yeah.
You haven't spent 10 minutes stood still. You spent 10 minutes, all right, not running, you're still further down the road than you would have been otherwise.
And that's really good because when you sit still or you sit down in the middle of an ultra, you're more likely to just seize up, aren't you, and not really and mentally
or
not want
cold.
To get going again. Yeah, get cold, yeah. So there's two reasons for doing it.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
So just keep moving. Relentless forward progress.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah, it's a book, isn't it? An American guy's written that book. Yeah.
That's right.
Is it Brian Powell? Did he write that one? I can't remember.
Oh, I should know. I've got it upstairs on the bookshelf somewhere, so I can't remember the author's name, but yes.
Yeah, one of those ultra runners from the US wrote that book.
Yeah,
cool. Okay. Well, have we covered quite a lot? Have we covered enough, do you think, about the fast 50 miles? Was there anything else you wanted to say? Or can we go on to the patron questions?
Yeah, let's go through some questions from the patrons because, I think there were some that fitted into some of this as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, they do. The first one here is actually live from Philip Haddock, one of my patrons. He's also training for the Lakeland 50. And he says, I do two speed sessions a week, one three-hour slow run and one over 3 hours and 2 days of weight training. Wow, that's brilliant, that sounds. And he says, do you think that is too much?
Well, when you said about one run that's over 3 hours, it depends on how much over 3 hours and for what purpose. So those longer long runs, are useful for sure, and particularly, you know, for novice runners who haven't got maybe the experience of going for, you know, 5-6 hours and longer. You need to be learning about kit in terms of what works when you've actually been out there. You know, does your pack start rubbing after 3-4 hours? The load, you know, where you pack stuff in your pack, where you put things in there, and how easy to access when you're out on the hills. You need to practice your nutrition. So what food works for you? You know, I was having a chat with a guy yesterday who, yeah, very good marathon runner, he's a faster marathon runner than me, but of course his marathon runs are all done on gels, and then trying to transfer that onto 100 milers, hasn't practiced what other nutrition is going to work. So it's about going out there and thinking, right, so what real food is going to work for me at this intensity? So yes, those longer time on feet is useful for identifying those aspects of ultra running. But in terms of the fitness gains of doing those longer long runs, you start to sort of question the risk and reward. Mm-hmm. Your risk of fatigue and injury will be going up significantly going over that 3 hour mark. And the reward of additional fitness will be getting less and less.
Would it be so, worth him hiking them then?
Yeah, so again, it might be going out and just doing a long day in the hills. So again, if it's Lakeland, it's maybe getting up to the lakes and just thinking, right, can I go and hike for 6-8 hours? You know, just but a good hike. There might be bits of jogging in there, but the emphasis is I'm going for a hike. Mm-hmm. You know, getting the walking poles out and hiking with them. And then the runs are then more quality focused. So we're saying about doing, you know, some speed work, some tempos. And within the, you know, the 3 hour run, there could even be some quality work. So adding in blocks of tempo effort. So some tempo hill climbs. So I just said to you before that, you know, don't be adding extra intensity within your long run. But if he's then doing a much longer zone one, lower end zone two hiking volume, he's got the capacity to then add in maybe a little bit more intensity into a 3 hour run. But in terms of is it too much, it all depends on what your time availability is. So if you've got the time to do more training, great. If you can recover from that and absorb that training, then brilliant. But of course, if it's starting to impact on too many other areas of life, then you've got to look at the overall balance.
Yeah. And is he recovering? Sorry?
Does that answer your question? He's live, isn't he? So he can respond back to me.
Yeah, Phil, get back to us. Did that answer your question? Kingsley had a question which was basically the same thing, and you've just answered that straight away, so that's good. but yeah, I suppose it's just, can he recover from all of that training? So it sounds like maybe, if it does seem like too much, maybe doing a hike for that long, over 3 hour run would be good. Let's take another question now. We've got David Grimsell, who would like to get into ultra. So he says, my question would be, if you want to get into ultra running, where would you start and what sort of distance races would you do to begin with? Now, I reckon 50k is a really good start. I love a 50k race. It's 31 miles. You can call yourself an ultra runner, but it's not that much more over the marathon distance.
No.
What do you reckon?
Absolutely. I mean, if you've got some experience and you've been doing, you know, maybe you've done a marathon, road marathon, things like that, stepping it up to 50K is basically a marathon and you just keep going a little bit longer.
Yeah, and it might be a bit hillier, so it might take you a bit longer than a normal, you know, like a London marathon, like you might be aiming for 4 hours, like it's a good time. Definitely exactly. Don't aim for that, like more like 8 hours for a 50K in the mountains, like the Manx Mountain Marathon, I'm guessing will take me over 8 hours.
But it shouldn't be a scary distance. You know, if you know, saying to you, oh, could you train and do a marathon, and you're thinking, well, yeah, I've done that before, that's okay, then saying 50k, that should be a very similar response. You know, it's not going to be you know, training is going to look very, very similar. So yeah, absolutely, that's very much within your abilities. Now, some people will jump straight in and do, you know, 50 miles or even 100 miles as their first ultra run. It's doable, of course it's doable. Is it sensible? Well, is any of this sensible? But it's a question, I come back to this, you know, how, are you going to enjoy it? Are you going to be smiling when you come to that finish line, or are you going to be grimacing because you're in a world of pain? And I think, again, there's another question from the patrons I spotted early on about, you know, ultramarathons planned for next year, and what do I do between now and then? And is that sort of longer term plan? So, you know, I've got one of my clients, the goal is to do, you know, 100 miles in the mountains. She's a US-based athlete looking to come and do, you know, 100 miles in you know, the Alps, you know, one of the European races. But we're building up. So we've done 50 Ks, we're building up to 50 miles, we're getting comfortable there. You know, we'll build up, get, you know, 100 K, no difficulty. That's, you know, building up experience in the mountains. And then we'll build up and build up, and eventually we'll be in a position where, you know, 100 miles in the mountains, you know, that's very achievable. It's going to be hard work, but yeah, very, very achievable.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing here. You know, if you're thinking, right, I want to get into these ultras, is look at this as a gradual process. Yeah, absolutely. Can I do a trail marathon? Maybe you've only done road marathons, so maybe just get some experience on the trails. And there's loads of really, you know, I suppose sort of entry level trail races out there. You know, me being up north, my immediate thoughts are things like the Lakeland Trail Series.
Yeah.
Very friendly, very open. You know, start, you know, you've got 10Ks, 15Ks, half marathon type distances, and then, you know, moving up to the marathon distances and beyond, of course.
But they do 100K one, don't they?
Exactly, they got the 100K. But that's a good way just to build up your skills and experience, you know, skills of running off-road. And then, yeah, it might be a case of a really fancy a mountain 50-miler, for example, like yourself doing the, you know, the Lakeland. But maybe you haven't got experience of being in the mountains and navigating as well, and map reading and things like that. And okay, yes, we've got our GPSs, but you still need to be able to map read. So is maybe spending some time actually just getting out in the hills. So we said before about just going hiking, but maybe that's it. You go out there with the sole purpose of practicing your navigation and your map reading, and just building up the skills for that as well.
And yeah, there really is no rush, is there? That's the brilliant thing about this. Like the only pressure that you put on yourself is from yourself. Nobody's really, unless you're an elite athlete, and even then probably not. I don't think Scarpa's telling you to go and, oh, you must do the UTS 100K, Tim. Like they'd be happy if you did the 50K, wouldn't they? You could run around with me. Yes,
exactly. Yeah, there's no pressure to do any particular events.
Yeah.
There's, you know, we get offered, you know, we get offered free places at sponsored events that Scarpa look after, but there's no expectation that we have to do those. So it all depends on what fits into our personal plans.
Yeah. We've got another question now from Severine. She's live also. She says she has a question about cross training on a bike. She, because you're also a triathlon coach, aren't you? So she says she prefers it when there's a lot of resistance and her legs go slower, but would it be better to have a faster rotation?
Both are useful. So, you know, doing some of the low cadence grinds, you know, doing some efforts there, that does help build the leg strength, you know, particularly for the climbs going up, for sure. If you're using bike as cross training, are you doing that as a workout? So, you know, one of your harder efforts for the week, or are you doing it as additional base aerobic conditioning, but without the pounding of running?
Yeah.
In which case, you know, the effort should be in that sort of zone one, zone two, you know, nice and easy. So just be careful you're not pushing more minutes per week into that kind of zone three tempo type zone. But using the bike is also very, very useful for working on your cadence. So if you're somebody that you know that your cadence is a bit low, so you're a bit kind of heavy footed, and you know that you need to work on speeding that cadence up. Or again, if you're somebody that you know that you struggle with the descents and actually being able to turn your legs over quick enough on the downhills, then doing some high cadence spin-ups on the bike can also be very, very useful, so that when you do need to run downhill and really turn your legs over really, really quickly, you've practiced that skill set, that motor patterning on the bike as well. So yeah, it can be useful from that point of view.
Oh, cool. Cool.
And the bike, I mean, I like using the bike for runners because you can really hurt yourself on a bike. You can go really hard and go into the pain cave and learn to suffer on a bike. Runners often, as soon as the legs really start to tendency can be to kind of back off a little bit, but on the bike you learn you can just grit your teeth and get on with it, and you can hold a bit longer, so it can be quite good for some mental toughness as well.
Brilliant. Cool. That's a great question there, Severin. Thank you very much for that one. So back to the running now. We've got Mick Suville. He has a question. He's doing the Race to the King, very popular races by Threshold Events there, 100K in June. So he hopes it's quite a runnable route, so it's like 65 miles, something like that. What are Tim's views on the best HR heart rate zone to run in to achieve the best possible outcome over the distance? Is it advisable to aim for maintaining an aerobic zone or push towards threshold if this was sustained by appropriate fueling? So that's an interesting question, isn't it?
Yeah. Keeping it aerobic. So I've not done Race the King. I've done Race the Stones twice. Second time I won it.
And
I've done Race the Castle. Although they're not, obviously that was a one-off event. They didn't then run that. They didn't repeat that one. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Race the Castle got third. I would just say you know, it's 100K. You've got to keep it aerobic. So again, I'll use the Race the Stones as the example there. You know, as far as I'm concerned, Race the Stones is pan flat. There are very few hills. Now it's a little bit lumpy. I grew up on it. I know the Ridgeway incredibly well. My parents' house is literally on the Ridgeway. But even that, I walked every single hill on the Ridgeway, even the very short ones, even the even some of the gradual hills, walked every single one. Now, in that first half of the race, yes, people were then running past me on those hills and getting ahead of me. But by the second half of the race, I was ahead of them and they never caught me back up again because they were slowing. So you're looking for that even effort throughout the whole distance. Now, Race of the King has got some good hills in there. So what you need to do is practice fast hiking. Because if you can fast hike up those hills, keeping your heart rate in that aerobic zone, you're going to find actually you can probably hike up those hills faster than some people think they're running uphill. But your heart rate will be significantly lower. But it also means you're not going to blow up. You're going to maintain that even pace throughout the whole distance. So yeah, it's keeping it easy. It's having the discipline not to go off too hard. And again, you know, if you want to get scientific, there's numerous papers out there looking at pacing strategies in terms of, you know, do you look at a fast start? A lot of the work on pacing has been done on track racing. So looking at 5K, 10K on the track. There's some work looking at marathon pacing. And there's a little bit looking at ultra running in terms of more the kind of mountain stuff or track racing in terms of 6 or 12 hour racing. But what they all show is that even effort generally will give you the fastest time. Now, sometimes there are tactics that come into that. So sometimes, you know, some races, and again, this comes back to maybe some of the shorter distance stuff where tactically you might need to go hard early on in order to kind of break people. But for an ultra marathon and what we're talking about, it's that even pace. Go steady at the start, stay aerobic, don't go hard, don't burn your matches. So we talk about burning matches. If you go into that threshold zone, you're burning a match. And you've generally got 6 of those that you can burn before everything then just crumbles and you're not going to be able to push out any real speed. So yeah, keep it aerobic.
Keep it aerobic. That is very good advice. Thank you for that. And that just reminds me that I shouldn't get too carried away on the Manx Mountain Marathon and try to run up the first hill.
I mean, again, a good thing to ask yourself in that sort of first mile, or the first few miles of an ultra marathon, if you're going up a hill, ask yourself the question, if this hill was in that last mile of the race, will I be running up this? And if the answer is no, start walking.
That is really good advice. I like that. Yeah. That's a good little nugget of information there. So we've got another question now. We've got three more after this, so hope we can fit them in. Tadeusz Cantwell says, my June race is 84K with 2,300 metres of ascent, same in descent. His main trails are around him are shut because of maintenance. So he knows he has to increase his mileage and his vert. But what is your advice on managing that? Like, should he do like 2/3 good distance and then 1/3 steep climbing, or what should every second weekend be a steep hike? What do you think there?
It depends on, you know, if you're needing to maybe travel to get onto some trails, you know, maybe it's going to be an hour and 2 hours drive away, then it might be a case of, yeah, can you do that on sort of alternate weekends or every third weekend or just once a month, just make the effort to get out onto those trails. And then the rest of the time is working on general base fitness. So if you can't get onto the steep stuff, if you can't get onto hard trails, just use your running just to build your overall fitness. If we can just get you faster and get you fitter running on, maybe it is on the roads or on you know, better hard pack trail, things like that, then fine, that's just what you've got to work with. You can then still work on skills in terms of footwork drills. So it might be working on some plyometrics, some skipping drills. It might be getting your, you know, the ladders, you know, you see, you know, footballers and sort of team sport people using for, you know, working on quick feet and skills there. It might be doing a bit of that. It's about, yeah, working on the uphill. So it might be getting on the treadmill and just doing some tread hills. So just sticking it on 10, 12, 15, or if you've got some of the really steep ones, you know, 20% inclines on the treadmill, and just fast hiking that, or starting to work on being able to kind of run at a steady pace on those uphill climbs. You might be getting in the gym and getting on the Stairmaster and just grinding out, you know, an hour on the Stairmaster and just building the leg strength that way. Or if you haven't got that, it might even just be using a box or, you know, plyometric box or a big step and just working on sets of 50 step ups at a time, building the leg strength that way. So those are the things to work on there.
Fantastic. I hope that helps you, Tad. He does have a bonus nutrition question, if that's okay. He says he's got a protein powder from a local shop with ISO, whey, glutamine and BCAAs. Is that overkill for running?
So the textbook answer is you should be able to get everything you need from your normal diet, and shouldn't need to supplement. But in terms of getting some additional protein into the diet, then yeah, a whey protein mix is, so an isolated whey protein is a good way to do that. And that's often maybe adding that in just before bed, just to, again, help with recovery overnight. That's fine. L-glutamine, again, quite good for the immune system. Again, you should be getting that from your diet, but it depends on, you know, what your diet is like. So, you know, if you're getting that from things like your red meat, but if you're not eating a lot of red meat, then maybe you need to be looking at supplementing it there. In terms of the branched chain amino acids, it's a bit of a funny one, that one. So most of the research has just shown that you don't need to add branched chain amino acids. You should just be getting that in your normal diet anyway. And I think if you're getting some whey protein in the mix, that should be hitting all your bases. I'll follow up and say, you know, if you are looking to supplement with things like these products, is you need to be very clear about where you're getting these from and are they clean. So look at the Informed Sport website and check, you know, have these actually been batch tested? So are these products clean? Have a look at some Ask a You Can Drop, mysportscience.com, I think his website is. But Asker is a very, very well-known researcher in nutrition and particularly in sort of supplements. And he's got a lot of infographics, a lot of really good information on his website. regarding, you know, what you could be looking at. Is it needed? What's the evidence base behind it? So, you know, do just look at that and then reflect on where does that then fit into your overall diet. And of course, if you've got additional concerns or questions about your nutrition, your diet, then is it worth actually having a chat with a nutritionist and just getting a bit more guidance and feedback specifically for you, rather than potentially just spending money that's just gonna be going straight down the toilet and of very little benefit to you.
Yeah, you could spend you know, a decent amount on maybe booking Renee McGregor to talk to you about your nutrition, but that could save you loads of money in the long term from doing random things that may not be right.
So just make sure he's a registered nutritionist or diet or sports dietitian, sports nutritionist, because there's a lot of people out there. It's a, you know, largely unregulated area, so just make sure you're talking to somebody reputable. So Rennie, or in my company I've got Liz Mahon, so she's got her own business as well, so you know, but there's lots of people out there. But yeah, that might be something you want to go into in a bit more detail.
Yeah, definitely those two. And then we have a question from Peter. He is working on planning for his first ultra in September 2024, which will be a 50 miler. So this year he's been doing speed work, but he doesn't have anything in July this year, between July and May. So should he start ramping up his volume towards the end of 2023, maybe do a marathon or something like that? Or can he just do maintenance training and some shorter fun races, keeping his volume high enough in training to tackle his big adventure in 2024? Yes, what do you reckon there?
Yes, I think it was the one I started to touch on earlier on. I'll ask a question in the chat. In many ways, it depends on, you know, what excites you and what interests you. So we can only really maintain that real focus and that, you know, maybe volume and intensity of training for, you know, a limited period of time, you know, let's say 3 months. So if you're looking to race in May 2024, you know, you don't need to start really focusing on that until, you know, the, you know, after Christmas and the start of the year, really, and then start to kind of get into a good groove with your training. So yeah, what do you do over the winter? No harm in doing some shorter speed work, you know, working on your 5 and your 10K. If you want to do a marathon, you know, do a, you know, a spring marathon, an early spring marathon or a winter one. Yeah, absolutely. Then add that into the mix. I think as long as you're maintaining some reasonable base fitness, so that whatever you then spring from in terms of your build up for the 50 miler, and that's not too much of a shock to the system, then great. It's about consistency. So, you know, you've got that rhythm in your week that you know that Monday's your, well, let's say Monday's your rest day, Tuesday you do a run, Wednesday you do a run, Thursday you do a run, Friday you tend to chill out, you know, Saturday you do a park run, Sunday you do a bit of a longer run. You just keep that rhythm going in your life. And then that build up of your training for the 50 miler isn't going to be a shock to life and rhythm and routine. But in terms of what you fit into that space, it's entirely up to you. You know, there's no obligation to do anything. If you're looking, for example, to try and run fast at that 50 miler, then yeah, looking to work on your 5 and your 10K pace, or maybe even push up to the half marathon, that would be useful for sure. If you know that your limiting factor is your overall endurance, then yeah, maybe looking at some half marathon to marathon type distances and just get, you know, build up your confidence and your experience of that kind of training, that would be useful. But I would come back to, what do you want to do? It's not what you have to do.
Yeah, that's a really great answer. I hope that helped you, Peter. I think he's going to be watching later, but that was a really, really great answer there. Yeah, do what you wish to do, Peter. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple of questions from Tracy now. One is a not live question, and one is a live question that she's just typed in here.
Okay.
So I'll read out the non-live question first. She's got an event in November. It's a, one of those ones where you see how far you can get. Okay. So
back in ultra style, yeah.
Yeah, so she wants to do 24 hours or as long as she lasts. It's in Meriden. And she's going to potentially be doing 150 plus miles. So I think this is a topic for a whole different broadcast, actually. I think she wants some tips on how to approach the event and how to tackle it. I think maybe we should just cover this in a whole nother one, because this is a really big question, isn't it? She wants to be maybe doing the more well-lit areas at nighttime. It sounds like a loop starting from Meriden near Solihull. Mm-hmm. Well, this is like my home turf. What is this event, Tracy? So petrol stations at night, distances as the crow flies, so she needs to go straight as possible with the route. She's got 100 miler in May, and the last weekend done my first 50 mile event of the year. She says she's comfortable with 50 miles, but her maximum is 58 to date. So this is quite a big leap up. It seems to be an event.
Is that me escape from Meriden?
It's not a loop. Sorry, Tracy. So she's starting from Meriden, and she lives in Warrington, Wigan. So she's heading towards that way. So she's trying to get home, basically, as close to home as she can. Yeah. Fantastic. Anything in a nutshell of advice here? I know this is quite a big topic, and she has got another question as well about lactic acid.
It kind of goes back to something we touched on earlier on, which is, you know, for these 24-hour type events, it's about pacing, it's about not going too hard, it's starting off easy. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the, it's about your route choice. So, you know, for that particular event, it's up to you what routes you pick. So you've got to be very clever about your route choice. The tendency is you try and pick those sort of flatter sections, you know, getting on the canals and canal towpaths or on the roads. But again, a lot of the kind of reasons people kind of pull out of that event is it is all, or a lot of it is going to be road running, for example. So the feet just get battered, as opposed to being on the trails where it's a bit more undulating, a little bit more sort of change of forces going through the feet and a bit softer underfoot as well. So it's making sure that you're conditioned for the type of terrain you're going to be running on. Is she doing it solo or is she doing it chained as a pair? I mean, that's another thing as well. If it is this event, I think it is, then again, there's the option of doing it as a pair. We're actually chained up together. So it's like run together.
Yikes.
So there's all those kind of things. But it comes back to what we talked about at the beginning of this call, which was that planning and preparation. And the more planning you put in and thinking about identifying your refill points. So identifying sort of petrol stations you're going to be able to access and what's going to be open, what's not going to be open, making a list of, even kind of, you know, what time shops are opened until. So you've got a clear idea of where you're heading for and what time you need to get there for before the shops shut.
Yeah, I see a spreadsheet coming on.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Get your spreadsheet out then, Tracy.
Yeah.
She says she's doing the solo eventually. She's not going to be chained to anyone, so that's good.
Okay.
She did also have a live question just earlier here. She said, have you got any tips on lactic acid in the legs on uphills? Because that's what stopped her running up the hills in her ultra last weekend. Mm-hmm. I think I know what you're going to say here.
I mean, if it's an ultra, then you probably just... you want to be backing that off. I mean, lactic, okay, we can go deep here if you really want. So
it depends how much time you've got. We've done an hour now, so it's up to you. Yeah, we've got one more question about hip flexors.
let's not go too deep here. Essentially, I would just say if the legs are burning like that in an ultra, back off the pace. You're going too hard. But obviously you can build up your tolerance to that in terms of doing those hill efforts. We talk about, you know, the 2-3 minute efforts and doing those hill repeats in training just to build your tolerance to that. But also don't fear that burn, because the lactic, although the burn in your legs isn't lactic acid, move away from that kind of terminology, but you are producing lactate, but that lactate is actually a fuel source, so don't fear it, it's actually good. The burn in your legs is probably more calcium ions and things like that, but again, let's not go too deep on this call. Maybe that's a sciencey chat for another day.
Yeah, it sounds like a whole different world. Okay, yeah, so maybe slow it down, especially on the earlier uphills.
People may have seen Morton have just released a new product, their bicarb mix. So a sort of bicarb soup, this type of thing. I haven't actually seen what the price is, but I'm imagining it's not going to be cheap. But that is a way of buffering that burn in your legs. And that acid burn. So it's coming. There will be more of these. It's a well-known way to improve performance, but that's, you know, marginal gains when you've already nailed everything else.
Yeah, it's like Killian Jornet level.
Exactly. Yeah. So for the vast majority of us, there are far more things we can be doing rather than spending money on the bicarb product to try and change the pH levels in our tissues.
Yeah, no, that sounds far too complicated for me. I'll just make my own at home as well. I've got some bicarb in the cupboard.
But be careful. If you get it wrong, it's rather disastrous.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, maybe not do that then. Brilliant. Have you just got time for 5 minutes more for one last question? It's Tina. She says, could you suggest any exercises that would help strengthen my hip flexor, please? My left side is weaker and started to ache again while I was doing the Chester 50 Ultra. So she thinks she doesn't pick her foot high up enough when the flexor starts to ache. So thanks in advance to Tim for any tips that you can offer.
Yeah, so my sort of favourite ones there are going to be things like marching drills, so with a band, so those little mini elastic bands around your toes, and doing marching drills, so picking your foot up and then holding that against resistance there. It might be doing dead bugs, so you're lying on your back, feet up in the air, and you straighten one leg away from you, keeping one knee up towards your chest, but again, a band around your toes there. So again, you stretch that out, change that over, or mountain climbers. So again, in that sort of press up type position, and again, pulling one knee up towards your chest and then back into press up position. But again, you can do that with a band around your toes to again, give you that additional resistance there. So I've got a few of those videos on my website. So maybe stick some links in the chat down below afterwards, and you can check on those. And then maybe Claire can copy those and demonstrate those and put a kind of bit of routine together. And stick that up on the YouTube if you want.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. Thanks, Tim. I'll link to, I'll have a look at those videos. I'll find them and I'll link to them. But yeah, that's great. Hope that the hip flexor gets strengthened up, Tina, by doing all those exercises. Do you have a shop on HP3 Coaching where you can buy resistance bands or anything? Is there any that you recommend?
Maybe I should sort that out, but no, I don't.
Maybe actually. It's just that, you know, I don't know if you know Nick Knight from NK Active, that he's a podiatrist that I've been talking to as well recently. He's got a little shop part of his website, and they actually sell like resistance bands, and because he said you can get some that are really like not worth bothering with, and so he sells this pack of five, and when you get to the worst, the hardest one, you just twin it with the easiest one, and then you build up from there again till presumably you're using all five. But thank you. There's loads of people that are watching live and want to say thanks to you, Tim. So I'm just going to read out some nice comments to you. Kingsley said, cheers, Claire, for this awesome stream with Tim. This is exactly what I needed as I'm getting into my Race to the Stones training. It's so great having an expert pointing out what not to do and what to do. So that's great. Phil Haddock, whose question we asked really early on, he says, thanks, Claire and Tim. Peter says, awesome stream. And there was loads of other nice comments as well. Let's scroll back and see if I can find
there were
honestly there were. Tadeu says thanks because you answered his question as well. Peter said that's a brilliant line. It was the one about I can't remember, it was that nugget of information that you told us earlier, walking the hills. If you can't walk at the end you shouldn't be walking at the start. There was someone else that said, Philip said, real thanks. Thanks, Tim. Oh, it's all the same people saying thanks over and over again. So that's all the thankses. So yes, thank you, Tim. It's been really great to chat to you again. And I will chat to you after I've done the Manx Mountain Marathon 50K coming up. What have you got next? Is it the UTS Ultra Tour of Snowdonia 100K, or have you got anything before that?
Well, I've got I'm doing another, what's it called, Snowdonia Crossing, so the marathon.
You're loving Wales at the moment.
Yeah, so heading down there again. So
of course, it begins with an S. Of course you're going to be in Snowdonia.
So yeah, very big, big bit of elevation gain there. So that's at the end of this month. And then in April, I'm going out to Sardinia with Scarpa, so doing a little trip out there. So that's
lovely. Another S. It had to be an S, didn't it? Spain,
and then
Sardinia.
Yeah, back to Snowdonia for the Ultra Trail Snowdonia 100K. And we've got a whole bunch of my athletes there, so there's going to be about nine of my team racing there.
Oh,
across
brilliant.
The different distances.
Cool. Is any of them going to do the 50K? Will I meet any of them there?
Yeah. So there's myself and Lewis doing the 100K, and then we've got a whole bunch of people doing the 50K, and a couple of people doing the 25K as well. So, and then in June, I'm off to do Lavaredo.
Oh, brilliant.
So 120K Lavaredo. And then in, what else have then got in? September, I'm doing the Ridgeway Challenge. So that's the full distance of the Ridgeway.
Oh, wow.
The 86 miler. Mm-hmm. Go back there and see what we can do for the full distance.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Oh, well, we'll all be following your progress. Just remind us where we can follow you again on Instagram and your website.
So,
details.
Yeah, Instagram's where I sort of do most of the sport type stuff. So, Tim Piggott, HP3. You can find me on Insta there, or the website is hp-3.co.uk. So again, there's bits of information on there, and more information about the sort of coaching team if you're wanting help with your own running, or again, specialist input from sort of sports psychology, nutrition, S&C. It doesn't need to be a full coaching package, so you can always just access the different members of the team there.
Fantastic. Yeah, if you want to improve yourself, having a coach is definitely a brilliant way to just get the best out of yourself. You don't overtrain, you do all the right things, and you get to chat to Tim like every month as well. It's fantastic. And he'll chat to you and only you for like an hour at a time. It's absolutely brilliant. We all love chatting to Tim. And Lisa Mason summed it up really nicely. She said, "Fascinating stream. Thank you both of you. Now offer a run in the sleet."
Excellent.
So have fun on your run today, Tim, maybe on the treadmill, so you're not slipping around.
We'll see. Snow's coming down pretty heavy now, so
it's really heavy now. Good luck with the sprinting in that. It's been fantastic to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time, and good luck in your next event.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
See you soon.
Cheers.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.